Hi, I'm Onas.
And I'm Grace.
We love the Wheel of Time fandom, and we love talking about why it's so special.
Our mission is to give back to the fandom through projects that amplify the fun and camaraderie.
I thought it was we make people cry.
Yeah, but in a good way.
This is
The Lights Work.
Hello and welcome back to The Lights Work. This is Anas, and as always, I have my very peachy friend with me, Grace. Grace, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm a little concerned though, because aren't peaches poison?
Well, you know, yes, peaches are poison, so make of that what you will. But, you know, we have a special episode for our fans tonight. So let me introduce our guest for tonight. Our guest is fantasy and fiction writer Jason Denzel. But we know him, or I knew him, for many years. A lot of people knew him for many years as creator of Dragonmount, you know, the online website community that at least to me was, hey, when's the next Wheel of Time book coming out? Let me go to Dragonmount and find out what's going on. But Jason is also the author of the Mystic Trilogy. Jason, welcome to The Lights Work.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I've been hearing wonderful things about your show. I've listened to a couple episodes. I'm all in. This is so fun. Thank you for having me.
We're really excited to have you.
So one of the things we like to do when, you know, when we have guests is ask them about their fandom kind of origin or their Wheel of Time origin story. So how did you get introduced to these books? How did that happen for you?
Yeah, so I first found the Wheel of Time back in high school. I think when I remember that this is back in the early 1990s, and I'm 45 now as we're recording this. So this is 30 years ago, over 30 years ago that this was, you know? And so it was the early 90s. And back then they had the Science Fiction Book Club. And that was back, for all you Gen X people, you know what I'm talking about already. Anyone who's younger may not know this, but what they had back then were these catalogs that you would get in the mail, and you could, for a dollar or a penny or something like that, if you literally mailed them a dollar, it would sign you up for this book club subscription where every month you would get a book club book in the mail, and you could keep it, and if you didn't want it, you could return it, but you'd have to pay for postage and all this stuff. And then, you know, there was a monthly fee on top of that afterwards, whatever, but you know, you were paying for each of the books you got. But this catalog came in the mail, and I was right at that age. I was devouring fantasy novels, of course, and this whole catalog was like exclusively fantasy novels that they had, and science fiction and fantasy. And in there, I saw the cover, the glorious Daryl K. Sweet cover for The Dragon Reborn, and it just blew my mind. For whatever reason, my 14, 15-year-old mind was just completely captivated by, what is that sword he's reaching for, you know? And also, what is that really wear? Why has he got like his coat like over his shoulder? That was a little weird to me, but whatever. And so I was like, I need this book, just strictly on the cover. I don't even know if I really even read the plot. I just needed that cover. I loved it. And then I realized, oh, hey, this is book three. And sure enough, books one and two were in there. And, you know, this is one of those things where I get six books for a dollar, you know, for your initial sign up, right? And so I added the first three there and I received them in the mail. And they probably sat on my shelf for a couple of years. And I think because when I got them, I was like, holy crap, like they're so big. Like, that's fine. I loved that. I mean, you know, when I was 15 and, you know, I could, you know, read, you know, a Robert Jordan sized novel in a week or something, right? You know, but for whatever reason, I didn't quite get to them, and I'm glad I waited. And I remember thinking a couple years later when I was 16, 17, when I finally did read them, I was glad at the time that I had waited, because I think I appreciated more because I was a little bit closer to the age of the protagonist. And so I immediately, as per design that Robert Jordan intended, like I immediately got soaked up into this story in identifying with these characters. It was like, oh my God, I feel like Rand, you know, like, like, you know, Egwene's like the girl next door, you know, and like all these things that like, it resonated with me. And then of course the story just took off, and I just, every book after that, just, you know, the second book is better than the first, and the third book is better than the second, and just kept going and going. And by, I think, book six was just about to come out back then. And so I think I caught inadvertently, I think I read the first five, and then book six came out like right then at that time. So I got the first six sequentially. I had to wait a little while for the seventh. And then for the rest of my Wheel of Time fandom experience, I've been waiting for every installment multiple years. It's just a thing.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that people who are watching the TV show now are getting that too, that because you're not a true Wheel of Time fan until you have to wait multiple years for installments.
That's right. The pain and the suffering is part of the process of being a Wheel of Time fan. You have to have that.
Yeah, that's true. And so, you know, a couple short years later, I found myself in college. I had read the series a couple times, you know, up to book seven or whatever, several times. And then leading into 1998, in the fall of 98, was when The Path of Daggers came out. And that was also the time that I was in college, and I was taking a class in basic HTML or something like that, and learning Photoshop 101 or whatever. And I either had an assignment or just wanted to do it on my own. I really, it's kind of fuzzy. But I put together a Wheel of Time fan site. And the reason I did that was because I had reached out to the Usenet groups, in my mind, it's the generation of fans before the drag 'em out generation, which in later, you know, has come on. There's been several generations in my mind of fandom, but I think that original online fandom of, you know, forums and AOL message boards and things like that, before everyone got off of AOL, before everyone hopped off of Usenet and found browsers, Netscape, Navigator, and things like that, Internet Explorer. And so I had gone onto all these other AOL forums, I'd gone on to the Usenet, and they were very entrenched in their ways. And there was a strong, it kind of felt clicky. Not to say that it was unwelcome, but it was hard for me to jump in. And I just had things to say at the time. You know, I'm 19, 20 years old or whatever. I had thoughts on the Wheel of Time, and I wanted to express this. And I kind of got a little bit of pushback of, another newbie, you know, whatever, kid, read the fact and then you can talk, you know, to us or something like that. And so this coincided when I was learning HTML or whatever. So I'm fine. I'm going to put together a website and I'm going to do it my way. And I'm going to invite people that, you know, from the forums that were out online at the time, wheelatime.com, which was the official video game website, had a forum up, and wheelatime.org, which had a very similar message board. And they, those two sets of forums pretty much had, I think, like the same overlap of people going to them. Like, I personally would check like both of those forums every day. And but again, there was something that I just felt like that I had something to add to it. And I don't know exactly what it was per se. I think that my angle early on was that I was going to create these little mini clubs, these little organizations, so you could sign up and be part of the White Tower or the Black Tower. You could be a Wolf Brother or Wolfkin, as we later called them. And, you know, you could be a Children of the Light, whatever you want. So you could join these little factions, these little mini clubs. And so that was like my day one angle on how we were different from wheelatime.com or whatever. And the site was ugly, but it had graphics. I remember within a week I had an email from someone saying, why do you have so many graphics? The web is not intended to be for graphics. You're ruining the internet. And that was my first you're ruining the internet message. It was a week into Dragon Ball 1998 for using.
You knew you were doing something right.
I knew.
You, know, you like, got that first this. Email.
And I'm like, this is what I want. Like, I'm a graphics major. Like, it was horrible. If you go on the Wayback Machine and look at Dragon Ball back in 1998, I don't know if we go back that far. I think the Wayback Machine didn't pick us up to like 99 or something, but still, mm-hmm. It's kind of cringy. Like, I also had, like, if you went to dragmont.com, it was just black with white text, and it said, like, you know, the Wheel of Time turns and ages come and go. Like, it had the little click thing, and you clicked it, and then it would like transition, like it would fade, cross dissolve, and the next thing. Oh, so cringy. But it was fun, you know. It was very cinematic or something. And so, but the timing of launching that site, which was literally like completely independent of Wattmania, completely independent of Tarvalon.net, completely independent of Theoryland, it launched, and all those other sites I just mentioned came up within like weeks and months. Like we were all within just a very short time period of each other. And so when Dragonmont opened up, it was right when everyone was getting hyped up for the Path of Daggers. And so, and again, at that moment in history, everyone was ditching AOL or whatever and getting on to more traditional browsers as we know it now. And so it just happened to be that, you know, I don't know, for whatever reason, you know, we caught on fast and our traffic spiked real fast. And I had to learn very quickly what a database was and how to run it and how to run a website and all these things. So, it happened really quickly that way. And then within 2 years, we were, you know, the tour books had figured us out, had found us, so to speak, and this is before tour.com, as we know it today, you know, being the awesome site that it is. But they reached out to us. They wanted to send me free copies of the books. They wanted me to help spread news about the release date. They wanted, and, you know, so all of a sudden it was just hit the ground running. A year after that, when Robert Jordan got involved, like he sent me a cease and desist letter, which was always fun. For at the time, I was trying to make a Dragonmount animated movie, like a short film animated based on the Dragonmount prologue. And it's because at the time in college, my major was computer animation. So I thought, I need a project. Like I'm going to animate this opening thing. And so I did it. I started recruiting people. And
so basically Winter Dragon, but animated.
Yes. And I have a rough animatic. I mean, we never finished it, but I do have like a rough animatic of it. And I don't know, man, I think it was pretty good. Like it wasn't all that bad. I mean, we never got, but we have some rough animation. Some of the 3D models we had made were really darn good, especially for 1999 or whatever, I guess 2001 yeah. quality. It's really mm-hmm. good. We had fantastic performance. Audio, I probably got it somewhere. One of these days I want to dig this thing up and like do a little feature edit or something on it.
Do you have that letter? The season?
I was gonna say,
letter?
Do you have it framed or
no,
something?
Because yeah, exactly.
I never threw it out, but I can't find it. But I have it's been 25 years. This is year 25.
Yeah,
I've got yeah. a whole garage full of boxes. You know,
it's in there somewhere.
It's gotta be in there somewhere. And I was thinking about, I should probably dig it up for our 25th anniversary, which is this fall. So, you know, we're recording this in May. I don't know when it's airing, but, you know, sometime in the fall is when our anniversary is. And so I thought I should bring it up for that occasion. But yes, this cease and desist for stopping this thing. And I ended up calling the number. It was his agent or something like that. It was his film agent. It was Robert Jordan's film agent on there. He was fantastic. He explained to me kind of on the phone, like, hey, can't do this, kid. And I kind of knew, but I was like, really? Like, I just want to do this like for fun. Like, I'm not trying to like make money off of it. But, you know, I talked to him and he eventually said, yes. All right. Robert Jordan is willing to give you a non-exclusive limited right to make this film. But he can pull the plug at any point. You're not allowed to make money. And he has to approve everything from the script to the designs to the final thing. And I was like, fantastic. I said, how do I send him material for him to approve? I said, oh, here's his email address. Go ahead. Just, you can contact him when you're ready. And I just like had this like meltdown. I'm like, oh my God, I have Robert Jordan's AOL email address.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's amazing. So when you first started the website, you know, you talked about all of the trials and tribulations of making it. Did you ever think at that point that it would become what it is today, 25 years later, having had his blog on there and being just such a huge part of the community? Was that something you ever predicted?
It was, I don't know if it predicted, but it was something that I definitely wanted. I was hungry, you know what I mean? And there was some friendly rivalry between the various Wheel of Time sites, you know, in those early days. And which is all kind of silly in hindsight because everyone visited all of our websites and we all became close lifelong friends and all these kind of things, you know? And But back then, you know, there was a little bit of a rivalry. For whatever reason, it was maybe it was a competitive spirit or fire that I had back then. But I was like, I want to do this. Like, I want to, like, I have, you know, a lot of people coming to the site now. A lot of positive feedback. The publisher wants to work with me. The Robert Jordan's on board. They're making back. That was back when they were making a Wheel of Time card game, and that company that was making it at the time, like a tradable card game, like Magic the Gathering, but a Wheel of Time version. That company, they were paying us to advertise and to promote it and everything. And so there was, and this was something that was real exciting for me. It was fun and it was challenging and. You know, I wanted to go for it. So I don't know if I want to say that I predicted that it would be big, but I wanted it to be big and I definitely pushed for that and wanted to be. I certainly think that myself, and by then there was lots of people helping out, myself and my staff, we collectively wanted to act like the big dogs, you know, and in order to be the big dogs, if that made sense, you know.
Yeah. You know, just taking a step back. So, you know, you went online, you made the website. But before that, when you were reading the books, were there people around you, like in real life, friends that you were like, this is my community that I'm talking to about the books? Did you have a close group of friends or something like that? Or was it really online where you went for that kind of discord?
I definitely had real life friends who had read the series and were genuine fans. And we talked about it. They weren't hardcore fan freaks, if I can borrow Matt Hatch's term, right? The Innkeeper's term, right? But you know, they were casual fans or maybe even really passionate fans, but the online fandom is where, you know, where I was talking to people daily about it, right? And that was part of the motivation for starting Dragonmount is, like I said, when I was looking for those use scripts, I was looking for that, not daily, but I was looking for that frequent interaction. I was looking for that community. And all the people that I knew who read the books at that point were friends of mine first, friends or family of mine first. And secondly, they happened to like the books. A lot of times they had read it because I had recommended it. I was looking for other people like me who were into these books, you know. And I had, before I started Dragonmount, maybe a year or two before it, like I was just so caught up in it. I wrote Robert Jordan this handwritten letter. I never ended up sending it to him, and I still have that letter, and it's kind of sweet because it was like, you know, dear Robert Jordan, you know, someday maybe I want to be a writer, that kind of thing, and you know, you've inspired me and all these kind of things, and so, but like there was that desire to connect with the work and to connect with other people and to find people who had the experience of having the books impact them in a major way.
One of the, I think, more poignant things about your story and about the website is your blog post about attending Robert Jordan's funeral, and you had been invited by his family to go to that, and it's a lovely article that you wrote. So obviously, you know, there's a lot that came from that experience. But what was it like in general to do that and to sort of be that fan representative while you were there?
I mean, that experience, that was, you know, obviously he passed away in the fall of 2007. So, I mean, that was a lot of years ago. And it's still to this day, it shines in my memory as one of the most special things I ever had the opportunity to do in my life. And, you know, it was obviously a difficult time. And I remember Wilson, his cousin and his close family friend, had called me up. And Wilson and I had spoken on the phone multiple times leading up to his passing when he was sick. And he would inform me and he would tell me what I was allowed to say to the fandom. And most of it I couldn't say. Most of it were things like, you know, he's declining, but I'm going to make a blog post in the next couple of days. But so don't say anything until then. When he called me up and he called me up and he said, you know, we lost him. And, And in that call, he said, you know, but I spoke to Harriet and we'd like you to come on out if you're able to. And I said, I would love to. And I had expressed earlier in a previous call, I said, if it's appropriate, you know, I would love to come on out, you know, if, you know, this is something that happens, if he passes, you know, and it's like in the final days when we kind of knew. And,
right,
and
right.
I said, if, you know, if it comes to that, then I would love to come out if it would be appropriate. You don't have to worry about paying for me. Like I'll get out there on my own and everything. So they invited me out and it was remarkable. They arranged for me to stay with at somebody's home, you know, a friend of the family. I'd never been to South Carolina. And so, I got there and I took a cab or whatever in there, you know, to the house. And they live in this historic part of downtown Charleston. A lot of your fans or a lot of your listeners, you know, probably familiar with seeing photos of it and the dragon gates, you know, the gates of his driveway have got the dragon, the Rand dragon carved into him. And so I arrived there and they were having an open house it was the day before the funeral and they were, I think it was the day of the funeral, if I recall. And so I arrived and, you know, with my suitcase and everything and immediately, I was brought in and made part of the family. I mean, that's the only way I can describe it. And I, in true Southern Carolina, South Carolina fashion, which I have since learned and I associate at the time as two rivers like hospitality. I have since learned that that's just South Carolina. and what I mean by that is I walked into Harriet and Jim's home and I don't remember who it was because there were multiple of them, but there's a gentleman there in his 60s or 70s, gray hair and a bow tie. And he shakes my hand and gives me his complete lineage of his family tree and how he is Jim's fourth cousin removed on his mother's side. And, you know, and everyone I spoke to knew verbatim exactly how they were matched up to Robert Jordan, you know, to Jim. And I got the entire family tree in great detail. And by the time I'd made it into the kitchen an hour later or whatever, you know, I finally got in there. I knew everyone's story, or I'd heard everyone's story, I should say, right. including gossip, of like what the latest thing was or whatever. And, you know, it was crazy. So I felt incredibly welcomed. And then the actual funeral happened and I got there a little bit early. And I remember speaking to the, I was at a church there, in Charleston, and I remember speaking to more family members and guests as they were arriving, everything. And the funeral was special, was open to the public, and there were some fans that just kind of showed up. Not many, though. There were Melissa, who was the founder of Tarvalin.net. She showed up, and then I was there. There were some others, and it was a beautiful little ceremony. Tom Doherty, who is the president of Tor Books at the time, did the eulogy, very simple, straightforward eulogy. And then I'll never forget that at the end, it was a church ceremony and they sang, and in the exit song, Harriet stood up and was clapping her hands and was the loudest voice in there. And, you know, I'm not a singer, but everyone in that church was on their feet. Myself, you know, everyone clapping hands, singing, and it was just this beautiful thing. And, you know, I'll never forget it. It's a beautiful church with the amazing windows and the light was coming in. It was just that time of day to hit it right. And so then after the funeral itself, there was a little reception and like the little gathering community hall or whatever, there at the church. And Wilson pulled me aside and says, you know, so the next thing is we're going to bury him, and that's at a private location, and it's, you know, we don't want it to be public, we don't want his grave location to be made public, we're going to go family only, but we'd like you to come. And we figured you should be the person to come and be that representation for all of his fans. You came all the way out here and we'd like you to do that. And I was completely moved. He had a little bracelet on, Wilson. And this is back when, like, again, if you kind of turn your way back machine to, you know, 2007, right? It was right when all those Lance Armstrong bracelets were popular, were a thing. Do you guys remember those? Like, they were like the little yellow bracelets. Yeah. And then every...
Wait, what? Yellow bracelets? What are you talking about?
Right, right. Oh, you wear them? There you go. Yeah. And so it was like, I know they're still around clearly, you know, but they were like a thing back then, right? And every different cause and charity had them or whatever. And so for whatever reason, there was one that Wilson had, and he was telling me about it, and he takes it off his wrist and says, Jim was wearing this when he died. I want you to have it. And so I still have that little bracelet, and it, you know, was a, I wore it on my wrist every day for, I don't know, years. And it finally broke his rubber. It finally broke. I still have it, you know, tucked away or whatever. I hate that it broke, but, you know, still, I wore it every day for years. And that was something I never really shared with a lot of people. Yeah, I didn't want to be like, look what I got, you know, whatever. But it was just, it was a special memory that I had from that event. And that right after that, then I'm suddenly in his car on the way to this private burial, which again was amazing. And he was cremated, so it was just, you know, just in a little box. And I've got pictures on that blog post you've probably seen of that little box right before we interred it. And so, yeah, you know, it was pretty cool. I drove over there in his Porsche. He, Rob Jordan had a Porsche, and he, his niece, I'll say with air quote, I think his actual niece, I don't know, but a relative inherited that, that Porsche. And so she gave me a ride. So it was a convertible, and so I'm cruising around in Robert Jordan's Porsche to his burial. And
wow. That was kind of,
when we were there, amongst other things, someone, I think it was the same niece, or cousin or something, I think it was the same person, said, you know what, it was in, Jim had mentioned at some point that he wanted a certain song played at his funeral. And they didn't play it in the church, and it was the, it was from the soundtrack to the movie Platoon, and it was this sweeping thing. I think it's mentioned, if I, it's been a while since I read it myself, but I think it's in that blog post. It's called out in that blog post, the name of the song. I think it's in there, in my thing about it. And but what we did is someone had it on an iPod or whatever, you know, was a thing then. And so we played it through his car speakers, because they didn't play it at the funeral or whatever, and there wasn't really a sound system there otherwise. And so we, a handful of us, were gathered around his parked car listening to this soundtrack, you know, song or whatever. And I think what it was is that it was something that he had talked about in the past, but this was part of, this was some of the music that he listened to when he wrote. And I I really love that. And I've got it on somewhere. It's in my own personal mix of music that I listen to when I write. It's in there somewhere. And so I always, whenever that comes on, I think of it too.
Wow.
That's incredible. That whole experience sounds like it must have been so surreal, just to be that close to the family and to RJ. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the surreal is a perfect way to describe it. There were so many things like that. I mean, it really was a milestone in my life. The other big thing that happened there was I was standing there at the foot of his grave, and Tom Doherty, who again, who is the president of Tor Books, was there, and Tom and his wife walked up, and the three of us are standing at the foot of Robert Jordan's grave. And Tom, or maybe his wife, but one of them turned to me and says, so Jason, do you write books? And, you know, I had this, I've told this story before, but I kind of had this crappy answer that I was like, not really. I do some filmmaking and short films. And rah, 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 rah. You know, I kind of grumbled out this half answer of like that maybe halfway articulated that I was a creative individual, but, you know, trying to kind of find my way, whatever, you know. And so I said, oh, okay, yeah. And years later, I met with Tom and I referenced that. And I said, hey, Tom, remember when we were at Robert Jordan's funeral and you asked me if I wrote a book? He's like, yeah. And I was like, well, I wrote a book. And so that ended up leading into, you know, my publishing story. But coming back to the funeral thing, the other thing that happened later that night, because we went back to Harriet's home, and you know, they had a nice catered dinner, and it was this incredible, it lives in my mind so well even to this day. It was a perfect South Carolina evening. The fireflies were out. This is in, you know, September, and so it wasn't cold. It was just perfect. All the windows in the house were open. Their yard is absolutely immaculate. And I'd been given a tour. I got to see the carriage house, his pool, and he had this koi pond and all these other things. It's amazing to be there. And someone came, and I remember what I was doing. I'm not even kidding. I was in the dining room reading the printout that was Brandon's eulogy that they had written, they had printed for Harriet. Harriet hadn't read it yet, but it was printed out and was sitting on their table. I was reading it, and someone, maybe Maria, came up to me and said, Jason, dear, Harriet is on the veranda, would like to see you, or something like that. You know? And I'm like, okay. So I go out there, and Harriet, you know, is drinking a glass of wine. She sitting on the bench, and sitting on the steps leading out to the side yard, and she pats the ground next to her and says, you know, have a seat. So I sit down next to her, and then Tom Doherty plunks down. So I'm in between Harriet and Tom Doherty. And Harriet says something to the effect of, I don't remember the exact words, but it was something to the effect of, Jason, we have a conundrum. Who do you think should finish the Wheel of Time?
And so, just a small little question. Just,
yeah, exactly. Like, what are your thoughts on this? And like, you know, I'm like, man, like, I wasn't going to bring it up. Yeah, you know, I mean, because I was curious, be like, hey, have you thought about this? Who do you think, or whatever? But like, I'm not going to bring it up when we just buried the man in the ground, you know, just 2 hours ago or whatever, right? But, you know, Harriet jumped right into that. I didn't have a name to offer. My first suggestion is I was a big advocate at the time of saying, well, what about you, Harriet? You know? And, and she gave the right answer. And now that I have had, more experience with the publishing industry and know what it takes to write a book, and certainly saw what it took Brandon to write the book or whatever, I see why Harriet wasn't the right choice for it. She's an editor, not a writer. I get it. But, you know, before I knew those things, I was like, why not you, Harriet? Like, you know, and you know the story. But, you know, she, you know, politely declined, you know, and said no. And so they bantered a lot of names. They, Tom and Harriet, bantered a lot of names back and forth. And I was in the middle and just watching them ping pong these names back and forth. Rothfuss was mentioned and no, and George R. Martin was mentioned and no, and you know, because they have their own things and they took a long time to write. Even back then, you know, they took a long time to write. Other names came up, but and I truly, sincerely don't remember them. But you know, there are probably the names of whoever, you know, the up and coming, you know, good writers, you know, at Tor Books were. And I don't think I know Brandon wasn't mentioned specifically by name. I had not heard of Brandon either at that point. I had heard of him, but I had not read his books or put together, you know, his deep passion for the series. So that was another example, Grace, I think, of, you know, it being surreal. Like, I'm like, there's nothing like, I'm a couple years ago, I was just a dorky college kid, you know, and here I am sitting in between Tom Doherty and an icon in the field and Harriet, another icon in the industry, these two powerhouse people talking to me about Robert Jordan, asking for my advice. You know, Tom asked me what I liked about the Wheel of Time. You know, he said, you know, what do you love about it? What makes it special? Why do you think fans you know, other readers besides you, you know, like it so much? What makes it different from other things you've read? And so I felt very incredibly privileged to be there. And I also felt a real responsibility to take mental notes and to write this down and to do this justice and to take pictures and to, which, you know, I got permission to share so that other fans could experience at least a portion of it in some way. That was really important to me.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. You know, you've mentioned all of these experiences you've had. And, you know, just trying to relate to some of the experiences we've had recently in the last year. We actually, when Origins of the Wheel of Time by Michael Livingston came out, a group of us went down to Charleston for
The
release and book signing.
Good.
Yeah. So, and we actually got to visit Harriet and Jim's house and see the door and see the garden.
Okay,
and,
yeah. So you know exactly all of that. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Exactly. Yeah, when you mention all that, I'm like, it's like, wait, there's this small kind of alley that leads to the other part of the garden. And it's like, wait, there's more. And it was just a wonderful, obviously it's probably changed, you know, 15 years later or so compared to back then, but it was just, you know, the history was there, you know.
Yeah,
it's
a special place. And I've been there a couple times since. I was there most recently just last year. I was out on I was out for a convention on the East Coast, and I live out in California. So anytime I get to the East Coast, I usually think like, hey, can I take an extra few days and go visit Harriet or something, except for like a Jordan Con. But I was out there for a convention. I'm out there. It has changed over the years. The biggest change is the carriage house. So you probably got a tour of the carriage house where he did his writing. And
We didn't get to see it. I think someone's living there now, so I don't think we got to see that.
Okay. Yeah.
We saw Maria's
office.
The office.
That's
the
upstairs that space. Part, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, got it.
Well,
we saw the downstairs too. Yeah, there was downstairs, like a little den, and then upstairs was her office.
Okay, got it. All right. Yeah. So I think, all of that, the first time I went, and the second time I went was in 2015 when my first book came out. I was on a little tour with Harriet and all them to help promote my own book too. And so that was 2015. So when I was there in 2007, it's the only time I saw it when it still obviously looked like Jim's office. Some of those pictures are on that blog post that you mentioned, Grace. And it was completely cluttered. It looked amazing. It was books everywhere. I mean, like, they weren't kidding. They don't exaggerate when they say that there were probably, you know, 15 or maybe 30. I forget. The number's so enormous, like 30,000 books or something like that.
I think it was 16,000. I just read the blog post today. I think it was 16,000.
All right, thank you. Yeah, but even then, it's
still
staggering. Like, I think I've got too many books in my house, and I'm not even approaching 1,000, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it was this staggering. There were swords everywhere. There were junk everywhere. There were newspaper clippings everywhere. There was a beautiful picture. I didn't feel right taking a picture of it, although I wanted to kind of see if there was a picture. This beautiful picture of Harriet when she was like 16 years old. It was at her debutante, you know, dance, whatever. So she was in this amazing gown, and he had it beautifully framed right near his desk, whatever. And it was lovely, and it's always stood in my mind. It's been a lot of years since he passed away, and I love you, Jim, but you know. But there were tons of like nudie pictures everywhere too. He was just kind of, I say this lovingly about him, but he was kind of a dirty old man, you know? And
one shocked.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of like, you know, he was probably very big into the, you know, Boris Vallejo type art, the classic, like Conan with the giant swords and the damsel with barely a bikini, you know, keeping her clothed kind of thing. So he had those things. And then, you know, there'd be patriotic things of, you know, I don't know, some, you know, topless woman sitting on a missile with, you know, like a American flag on her shoulder or something, you know, whatever. And, but he had, he had all sorts of things. There were tons of, there was a beautiful statue of Ganesha. There was lots of Hindu statues and paintings that he had or whatever. There was a really cool bowl there, a shallow bowl, and it had dragons and clouds in it or whatever. Oh. I'm like,
Bowl of the winds?
The bowl of the winds, right.
And I mentioned it to Harriet at some point. I said, is this the actual bowl of the winds? You know? And she's like, I don't know, whatever. And then later that year, they were clearing things out and I get a package in the mail and they sent me that bowl and I have it today.
Wow.
And so it's, it has some clouds. I think it has a dragon. It's got some Chinese characters on it. I need to go and like, I've never, over all the years, I keep saying this, but I really do need to like just post it online and be like, hey, what does this say? It probably says something, I don't know. I'm not going to speculate what it says, but it probably has nothing to do with the Wheel of Time, obviously.
Right.
You know, it probably says like rice or something. Like, this is the rice bowl or something, you know? But anyway, it was this cool little thing. And, you know, that's one of a couple trinkets that I inherited from that collection or whatever. But he had a full human-sized skeleton. I think there's a picture of that in the blog post, but there's a big skeleton there and a helmet. And there were cane swords. There were swords. There were guns, Wheel of Time art on the wall, some stuff. A lot of it sent to him by fans. So, yeah. So there, when I say it was like walking into a eccentric wizard's tower.
Right.
That's what it was like, you know? And that's what it was like.
I think one of the things that's just so amazing about having these opportunities to go and be this close to Robert Jordan and his team and his family and see all these things is then having the chance to share it with the fandom. And I think that's what makes it so special. It's almost too overwhelming for one person to really take it all in. And so then to be able to share it with everybody, that's something that Anas and I have talked about a lot, and that's why we do this podcast, because we've had a few opportunities like that and we love being able to share it. So I just wanted to read this quote from your blog post, because to me this embodies the Light's work and what we do here, and I think it feels like you were doing it a long time ago when you went to this funeral, when you shared all of these amazing stories that you're now sharing with us. So the quote says, and you're speaking to the fandom here, even though you couldn't attend, I promise you, whether you're reading this in the school computer lab, at the office, or in your kitchen, you were in my thoughts and heart, and I did what I could to make sure RJ and his family knew it. It wasn't just me visiting them, it was all of us. And I just love that. I think it's beautiful. So thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. It's been so long since I read that post myself. And sometimes I've gone back in previous years, especially in the anniversary of his passing, and I would, you know, like to tap back into that. But what's, you know, there, I do remember it being such a big deal to me that, you know, this wasn't just me. I mean, I feel like I'd won the lottery, you know, in that I was there. And maybe you had that same kind of feeling, like, oh my gosh, I'm here in Robert Jordan's home. And Harriet has just been amazing over the years. She's welcomed so many fans. I mean, if you look into this, please don't just show up at Harriet's doorstep or whatever. But, you know, like there are, you know, if you put your mind to it, there may be ways, you know, that they have welcomed people into their home before and, you know, as guests. And that's such a amazing experience.
The fandom experience, right, changed forever with all these, you know, these opportunities and everything that during you went on. And you mentioned, you know, generations of fandom. How has the fandom changed, you know, when you look at, you know, that, you know, the Dragon Mount era with all the websites, and then, you know, when Brandon came on, and now, you know, Twitter of Time, and, you know, like that kind of, how do you think that has changed to how it is now?
That's really interesting, because let's call them ages. The first age of Wheel of Time fandom, right? We'll give them ages. I think of the first age as being, you know, the news groups, right? And then the second age kind of being like the Dragamount, Wattmania, Theoryland, Tarvalin.net, you know, that generation. And then I kind of think of a third generation being the Brandon era. Like, not just when he, and I think of that as like, I'll say the late Wheel of Time Brandon, early Stormlight Brandon, you know, like, so 2010, 2000, like around Memory of Light. And the reason I think of that in my mind is that because that's when Brandon started to become his own thing, independent of Wheel of Time. And when the two fandoms fed each other, Brandon fans came to Wheel of Time, Wheel of Time fans went to Brandon. And he certainly, to this day, continues to carry the torch, you know, the bonfire that is, you know, Robert Jordan and legacy, and was handed to Brandon in a very clear way. And Brandon has maintained that and made it even larger on his own, you know, through that or ever. But I kind of think of like that generation, that age is like a generation of fandom. And then today, the Twitter of time, and, you know, by extent, all the podcasts and the, you know, the whatseries.com and, you know, and Instagram and everywhere else, this social, you know, when social media took off, and, you know, Nablus and WattCon and everything else, you know, and how's it changed? Well, I mean, the biggest thing is that, you know, the fandom is on social media versus the fandom being on Dragon Mount, you know. Sure, we still have forums and you can still get an account and a newsletter, all that. And of course, we've got social media and, you know, but it's, Dragon Mount is, I think, at this point right now, known more for its historical legacy stuff than it is what it's doing right now at the moment. And that's a big reason that I am using this 25-year anniversary to take a step back, and I've incorporated it as a legal nonprofit, and it's Kathy Campbell is now the CEO of Dragon Mount. I've stepped back. I am no longer involved in it on a day-to-day basis. And it's, and I, because I, like I was talking about that hunger earlier, you know, when I was 20 years old, you know, I wanted it. I wanted everything that was Wheel of Time to go through Dragon Mount. I wanted, and man didn't want to be exclusive on everything. You know, wasn't that horrible, you know, but I wanted to be there in the heart of it. I wanted to be in the tour books, you know, decision room for cover selection, you know, which I was for a while, you know, like all the ebooks, all those ebook art, like I had input on every single one of those. I think I gave them the suggestions of what scenes to do for many of them, that sort of thing. So I was hungry back then, and now I'm not for Wheel of Time. Like I mean, I'm much more zen about it now. I'm older, more mature, and I've got, you know, a lot of other things going on in my life. And my driving passion right now are my own books and my own stories. And, you know, so I think I now put, now a big thing is, and I told Kathy this a couple of years ago, as I said, I need to get to a point where I'm putting my best creative efforts and time and hours of the day into my own work rather than to Robert Jordan's, you know. And and so that was getting to that point where we are now, where I'm not involved, was a lot of work. And it's kind of cool now though, because I look at it, I mean, I'm still on mailing lists and I still am kind of in the loop, but for the most part, when anything comes in, it's, I forward it to Kathy, and Kathy now talks to tour books about all the stuff, and I'm out of that loop. And so I, like when I, the most recent news was about Varen being cast, mm-hmm. and or acknowledging that she was, you know, being played or whatever. And I learned about that. Normally I would have heard about that way in advance, but, you know, Amazon did tell us early, but I wasn't in the loop, so I learned about it with everyone else. And that was kind of a cool kind of experience for me. I'm hoping Amazon's not listening right now. I'm still on their distribution list for early TV shows, so I'm hoping I could see season two early. But again, like, there's a difference between being able to sit down and just watch it and having to sit down and watch it with the notebook and take notes, because I'm going to have to record this. I'm going to have to talk about it. I'm going to have to, people are going to want to know what my thoughts are. And now, when season two hits, I'm just gonna be able to sit down and just watch it and just enjoy it. And I'll probably still have thoughts on it, but, you know, it isn't my job anymore.
Yeah, so we definitely want to ask you more about your own books and being an author. But before we get to that, just one more question for you about the Wheel of Time fandom. And this is something that I've been trying to figure out and we've been talking about. So we always like to get everybody's opinion on this. Why do you think Wheel of Time fans are so awesome? Like, what makes this group of people so amazing and so special?
I think the heart of why our fandom is special is because we are so welcoming to everyone. Robert Jordan, yes, The Eye of the World, written in 1990. It's a, you know, 30-year-old book or whatever. There's are some antiquated tropes in the series. There's some older ideas, you know, of maybe gender essentialism and other things like that. There's way too much, spanking of women and none of men and that kind of thing. You know, a lot of that. But that said, for its time, in the context of when it was written, and certainly it progressed more, The Wheel of Time was a forward-thinking series. It has always embraced that spirit of being inclusive. It was never, from the very get-go, the initial kernel idea was never, ever, ever going to be like, hey, I'm going to set out to tell another white boy adventure story, you know? And maybe on page one, it might smell that way a little bit, but, ultimately, it embraced that idea of inclusiveness. And it, in some ways, I think Robert Jordan, in his own way, it's almost like he was encouraging or gave permission to his fans to share in that inclusiveness. And I have always marveled at it, not just in, you know, because it's, you know, inclusiveness is such a thing that's talked about, rightly so, in social media and everywhere we go. It's part of our life, which is amazing. It's been part of my life and my Wheel of Time experience since 1998, certainly when I started Dragonmount. It's always been about not just me, you know, like I talked early in this podcast about how, you know, I identified with Rand. I was, you know, tall and had his hair and, you know, and had my two good guy friends and the girl next door, but the girl I love, you know, like I was living kind of my best Rand life in my 20s. And, you know, I am so glad that there are so many, like this series has expanded. So it's not just a story for me to identify with the main character. There are so many places that anyone can identify. And I love that Robert Jordan, really embraced that idea, even at a time where it wasn't even yet a conversation.
We've tried to figure this out, but I think inclusivity is probably one of the most, it's the strongest kind of feeling that you get that, wow, I've found my people, or this is a place I can always return to. So you can be away from the fandom and be away from however you interact with the fandom, but whenever you come back, it's like this overwhelming positive feeling. And I think that's what makes it really awesome. Yeah, I agree totally.
Yeah, it's coming home. And it, you know, the couple times I've been to Charleston, I feel like I never lived there or whatever. It's not my home, but I feel like I'm home. When I come to JordanCon, I finally figured out that, you know, I had been to 15 of them and, 10 of them. What year? We just had 15. You're 15, right?
Yeah, 15. Yeah.
So I had 10 of them. I missed five. And so this was my 10th one that I just attended. And I went to the first, I don't know, eight of them or something consecutively. It was eight. And then I took a couple of years off and I came back and, as a guest of honor, and when I came back that year, it was like coming back home. And then a couple of years passed and the pandemic and everything, and I came back this year and the same thing. It was coming home. It was seeing family. It was a family reunion more than anything else.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, we do want to talk a little bit about, you know, writing fantasy yourself now. You know, you've published the Mystic Trilogy. And I think it's not really a question if you were influenced by the Wheel of Time when you wrote this, but were there times where you were like, I have to like not write, like, you know, how I think of it. Not let
Wheel
of Time
really... I can't write the spanking scene.
right. Yeah, like, how many times, like, what were the times where you're like, I need to not let Wheel of Time, like, take over how I write my own story? Like, how hard, because you were, as you've mentioned, how entrenched you were in the series and the fandom and everything. So when you actually, you know, start writing, how was that experience?
I mean, you're absolutely right that, the Wheel of Time has probably an outsized, influence on my writing. But that said, what I take from Robert Jordan is not his very verbose style of writing. I like Brandon has said about his own stuff, like I could never replicate Robert Jordan's writing, and that's fine. Robert Jordan probably couldn't have replicated my writing or Brandon's, you know?
Right,
I just can't.
Right.
I've always been pretty secure in my own voice. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that I started in film school, so I have a very cinematic approach to my writing. It feels very cinematic. I get a lot of that feedback. It's because I was a movie director for a while, and I love that I write like I'm directing the movie in a lot of ways. But what I did get from Robert Jordan was that love of the epic scale of backing out the win scene. Like, I don't have an opening win scene, per se, but the idea of the wind, all the fans listening know, like that sense of like the wind blowing through and, the wind blowing over the crumbled remains of the Choden Call, the wind ruffling Rand's hair, on the road or whatever, and the sense that it carries a story with it, and that big sweeping vistas. Like, so many times when I read Robert Jordan, it's almost like they've got ultra widescreen, thinking for modern audiences, like the big new Dune movie. Like, you can see, that director's style. He'd probably be great for a Wheel of Time, the big sweeping vistas and all that kind of thing.
Right.
I love that part of it. And so I take that part of that energy, I'll say, from Robert Jordan. I try to take his characters, not his characters, but the... Like, Matt is part of my DNA. Matt and Elaine and Min and Rand and Lan. Like, these are characters who are part of my soul now, And I try to think, like, what's special? Why do I love Elaine in this scene and she drives me crazy in this scene? Why do people hate Fael so much and some other people love Fael so much? What is it about the way that he writes these characters that makes us feel so strongly about them, that we remember them, that they're so lifelike? I try to dissect that and try to take that and try to make my characters... I don't have in the Mystic books. The Mystic books have, especially the first book, which was intended to be a simpler story with a small, few locations, small cast of, less than 10 characters or something, and it expands
right
over time. But that first book was intended to be pretty simple. But I tried to think, like, how can I make all 10 of these characters unique and memorable in some way? How do I make them special? How can I make it so that maybe someone who reads this can love them as much as I love Matt and Min and Elaine, So that's what I try to take. The characters and that epic scope.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. You finished the story. What's next? Is there a big epic fantasy thing that you've had in your mind or want to tell that you're working on now?
Yeah, that exactly. So first, for the Mystic Trilogy, it's all complete now, and the first book is very accessible. It's a quick read. The main character is 16 years old. It feels a lot like a YA fantasy, and you could probably classify it as such. But what I loved about what I love most about that series and the goal and what I took from Robert Jordan on that is again that epic scale of the second book isn't just about the same character when she's 16 or 17 years old. it's a, this trilogy is about her life. And so the first book is a snapshot of her life and some experiences at 16. The second book is her life and snapshot when she's in her 20s. And the third book is later on, without spoiling it. But it's intended to show the full scope and sweep of her life. And you can probably see on the cover, you know, how she's much older. And so it's the same characters.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I wanted to embrace this idea of, like, you know, a story that spans time, and that we can see the patterns of an age even coming into play here. It isn't just, you know, the life and adventures of Pamela, this character. It's, you know, it's her whole story, which is a microcosm of a greater story of this island that she lives on, the society that they live in. So that's where Robert Jordan kind of inspired it, was, you know, that big sweep. Now, that said, my next book, the one I'm working on now, it's got the title changes all the time, but I'm currently calling it The Celestial Saga. It's a standalone epic fantasy story. I actually began writing it before the Mystic books. I got, you know, some ways into it and realized it was so big, so complex, I wasn't ready for it yet. And so I backed away and I wrote the Mystic books instead. So I've returned to it, and I'm so excited for it. It's one of these things that, like, you've heard Brandon talk about, like, people ask Brandon all the time, they say, like, describe the Stormlight Archive. And he's like, you know, like, how do you just, you know, what's it about? Like, what's the Stormlight Archive about? I kind of feel this way about this book, and I'm getting there, being able to articulate it a little bit better. Not quite there. I'm still working on it. But, you know, it feels like it's much closer to a Robert Jordan story than my Mystic books are. It has this sweeping story that's it's got, you know, battles, it's got a really cool hard magic system in it, and at a high level, it's about this warlord who is sent by his emperor across the sea with an armada behind him to lead this armada to go and bring home their queen, who had been abducted. And the warlord, this queen that they're going to rescue, was someone from his childhood and that they were in love. So he is going out there to find this archipelago of islands that are misted. They float in the sky. They're stacked up on top of each other in the air. And he has to arrive at these islands and navigate the political situation, navigate the mystical stuff going on, and try and find what happened to this queen and bring her home. And so it's funny because I've had this idea for years. It's evolved over the years, but I've always kind of brought it back to, and I've told Harriet this too, that Robert Jordan had, some of you probably know, some old fans probably would know, that after the Wheel of Time, as the near Wheel of Time was finishing up and at the end of his life, he signed a contract for a multi-book series that he was going to write after the Wheel of Time, and it was called The Infinity of Heaven. And I remember hearing the pitch for The Infinity of Heaven, and the pitch was about this guy who goes to these archipelago of islands and gets, you know, shipwrecked there and has to navigate the political and magic system. And it just always just kind of stuck with me that it's not the same story, but because I've heard a little bit more about it, but it's not the same story, but it echoed the thing that I'm working on now. And so I'm real excited about it. You know, I'm roughly ish halfway through it. Now that I'm not doing Dragonmont, I've got more time to write, which has been great. And it's, I'm real excited about it. The people who have read the first portions of it have been, hyped for it. And I'm trying really hard to keep it as one book. I think standalone epic fantasies are something I used to love when I was a teenager. And, I love a good series, but there's something to be said for just a one and done story, don't you think? You know, mm-hmm. So
yeah,
we'll see if the publisher wants to split it up. It might be too big. We'll see.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds so cool. I just love the words that you choose for your titles. I haven't read the books yet, but I did watch the little trailer on your website today, and it's like so magical and sparkly, and like celestial and mystic. I love those words. So I'm excited to hear more about the floating islands, which like immediately I thought of the new Zelda game. I don't know if,
you're
a video game person, but there's islands in the sky.
my son and I, my son who's he's 14, he and I stood in line at our local GameStop and purchase our copy of the new Zelda game. And it did occur to me, absolutely. It occurred to me, like, if I'd been a little bit faster, man, I really could have, like, leveraged that.
Leveraged that hype.
Or whatever. But, you know, when the first Mystic book came out, it was right around the time, it was published in 2015, right around the time that The Force Awakens came out. And I remember being like, yes, I caught it right in time for the mystical girl with a cool staff, you know, which was, you know, Rey from Star Wars. And I was like, that's Pamela, the main character of Mystic. So,
yeah.
So at least I hit that one.
So we're going to start to wrap up. But one of the things that we do before we end our episodes when we have a guest is that we like to ask some rapid questions. So we're going to ask you about 10 or so questions. And just very quickly, we want you to give us the first answer that comes to mind. Don't think too much about it. Okay. Just sort of
I know I'm long-winded.
What you feel.
I mean, the thought is, you know, they're yes or no, or they're a choice.
Okay.
So
yeah. So it shouldn't be too hard.
You could you know take your time to choose, and I can always edit that. That's fine. But in the sense that you know they're meant to be gut instinct. You know.
Got it.
What is the first thing that comes to your mind?
All right, let's do it. Hit me.
Okay. All right. Favorite Wheel of Time book.
Fires of Heaven.
Favorite character.
Rand.
Favorite season one episode.
Episode 4.
Yes. Favorite actor on the show?
I love them all, but Ahmad, who plays Loyal, because I met him and podcasted with him, and he's just my guy.
Yeah. Favorite season two teaser scene?
The Dark Friends social hour. Social gathering.
Yeah. Perrin, Matt, or Rand? I think we know.
Rand.
Min, Elaine, or Avienda?
Elaine.
Coolest item that you saw in Robert Jordan's workspace at the Carriage House?
The picture of Harriet that I described.
You have a lot of swords. Which sword is your favorite?
The Heron marked sword.
Nice.
And which character is Pamela from your Mystic trilogy most like in the Wheel of Time, or who would she play on the show?
Oh, that's a good question. Egwene.
Nice. Yeah,
she's definitely in
the Okay, so now I want to read it even more.
No, I've listened to the first chapter, and as soon as the first scene starts, as like she storms out of the house or something, I'm like, that's Egwene. Like in my like not that she's Egwene, but like the feeling, I was like, oh, huh, okay. You know, it's hard to not like not think of Wheel of Time reading, you know, your book.
The only difference is I think is that Pamela in that first book and in that first half of that first book, she's a little more immature than the Egwene that we know in, but Egwene's older too. Like she's 18 or whatever, you know, she's so Pamela's a little more immature, but she quickly goes through the fire and, you know,
yeah,
she's an Egwene for sure. Got from the same cloth.
Right. Awesome. No, thanks for doing those rapid questions. So the one other thing that we do before we wrap up is our favorite fandom moment of the last week. And you know, we'll go first. So, you know, you can try to think, or, you know, it could be the last couple of weeks or, you know, a recent fandom moment, that you like. Grace, what was your favorite fandom moment this week?
I'm going to go with, this is kind of a a standard one, but the audition scripts that came out, and all the season three speculation that came from that. So we saw a scene between an unnamed person and an unnamed Aiel person, and it seemed to maybe be a wise one. So that was exciting to see. And then there was another scene that was just sort of described. And of course, everybody had, you know, theories and excitement about what that meant for season three. So I just really enjoyed seeing people talking about that.
Is that it? Just the one? Is that the one? One moment. So I get the timeline's like so kind of off for me. So I'm trying to think if this makes sense. I mean, Varin was last week, right? Or was it the week before? I can't tell.
Varin like was the week before, like the end of the week before, but it like continued into this week.
Did we use Varin? Did I talk about Varin last time? I forget now.
I think you could talk about it again. I don't think we got the BAFTA images until this week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I thought that, you know, that whole, you know, Varin is one of my favorite characters. And, you know, we kind of were suspecting Miracel would be, you know, cast as, but, you know, I was not expecting to see her in costume and like, a, you know, the 2 second clip. So, you know, the fact that we got to see that kind of out of the blue on Mother's Day on a Sunday. And then, you know, Matt and I jumped on the dusty wheel and started like, is that what is that in the background? Where is she? Oh, you know, all these things. So just the fact that the fans are feeling all of that, that hype, and it was slowly building up. You know, Rafe was like back and, you know, doing What Wednesday. Unfortunately, you know, with the writer's strike, you know, that's, you know, unfortunate. And hopefully they get what they're kind of advocating for. But the fact that we got Varin confirmed, then, you know, all these new casting, the actors on social media are interacting with us, and fans are just getting so excited. The hype has truly, you know, gone back to those, you know, the season pre-season one release hype. And yeah, I think that's just feeling that is just awesome. And I think it's going to be it's going to get crazy, like more and more crazy, you know, as we start getting more things. Yeah. Or Jason, did I take the Varin? Is that something you were
thinking about? No, I've got my own here. And but this is a unique experience for me because like I heard about the Varin thing, but only after, like, you know, not the second it was released, as I would have in the past. Like, I heard about it eventually, you know, and I saw it and it was really cool. And even the scripts thing, like Grace, you mentioned, I hadn't heard of that. And so that it's kind of refreshing that I don't know some of these bleeding edge things in the series. What I did hear about, though, and this will be my little moment to share, and it definitely is kind of centric around my experience here too, is it's a small thing, but the Orbit UK, who publishes The Wheel of Time in the UK, announced that they've got a new edition of The Eye of the World coming out, some collector's edition. Yeah. It's really cool, the red cover and that sort of thing. And what I was so excited about this week was that no one reached out to me to tell me that it was happening, that this was a thing and that I had to do something about it. B, I didn't have to go and tell the Dragonmont staff about it. They had already found it on their own and already run with it. And I was able to just be like, huh, there's nothing for me to do here. I'm going to go back to writing my own stuff now. And that was kind of awesome, you know? So like, it's a small thing, you know? I mean, like, there are definitely, I don't do Twitter as much right now. Of course, first of all, Twitter's a dumpster fire and we all know what's going on with it and that sort of thing. But I'm trying to get off of social media a little bit more so I can, again, focus on the writing. I'm not abandoning social media or whatever. But like, so I don't see the Twitter time updates. I've got all my Wheel of Time alerts have now been muted. You know, so this is a new experience for me there too.
Yes, it says Jason Denzel is on semi-hiatus to draft a new book. That's your Twitter name right now. So Twitter name. Nobody bother Jason on Twitter.
you can bother me, please. But, you know, but, yeah. I mean, just may not reply for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I mean, you know, I saw, you know, you mentioned a few times, you know, handing over the keys to Dragon Mount. So, you know, in 25 years, that's so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
We'll look forward to, you know, that kind of celebration and, you know, what comes out of that. So, we'll see. Thank you for, you know, guesting. But, you know, again, thank you for Dragon Mount. Again, I definitely, for many years, and I've said this on the podcast, right? Like, it was like my homepage.
Yes,
like, when you open a browser, it would be like the thing that showed up. Yeah. So it was like, you know, it's like the thing that, you know, you're like, well, that's, you know, what I wanted to know. It's like, when is, you know, the next book coming out? Or, you know, is there a new something that's released? Or the prologue, is the prologue out? You know, that kind of thing. And thanks for all of that. Yeah.
You're welcome for that. But sincerely, thank you for carrying the tradition on, you know, and for stepping up into both of you, you know, stepping up into, you know, being content creators and doing all the things you do with the Dusty Wheel. And, you know, congratulations on what you are doing. And, you know, being able to go to Robert Jordan says, I mean, you're doing the same things I was doing, you know, years and years ago. And so, like, you know, I'm never going to not be part of the Wheel of Time community. Anytime you want me on this podcast, I'll come back, you know, and or any podcast, I'll always talk about the Wheel of Time, and I'll probably do some blog posts and video appearances every now and then. But my time as a leader within that community, as a central hub for that sort of thing, I am gracefully backing away from. I feel like I have had more than anyone's fair due share of, you know, this amazing franchise, you know, I'm looking forward to having more time for my own stuff and to coming back and sharing that too, you know, sharing that with the community, not just as like a promotional thing and not just a marketing thing, you know, I don't mean it like that, but like as just being able to go and say, like, hey, I went through a lifetime of Robert Jordan Wheel of Time experience, and this is what my brain came up with. See how it's different, see how it's the same. And yeah, please go. And like, you know, there, if you continue to read Mystic, see if there are other little Wheel of Time nuggets and references, and some things are the way I specifically word or name something that I know a Wheel of Time fan is going to immediately pick up on. And, you know,
nice.
There's other characters that are homages to other Wheel of Time, you know, not just Carbon Clothes, but a Wheel of Time fan. If you know, you know.
Like Easter eggs. Yeah. Easter eggs and things like that. Yeah. I love that kind of stuff. But also the fact that, you know, there's no way I can. It'd be very hard for at least someone like me to not see through the lens of the Wheel of Time lens, sure, and knowing you and reading the work. But I am. It's it's something that I've started listening to, and that's what I mostly do now, is listen to books, and I like the narrator, so that's very important to when I start listening to books. So I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for being here. We'll put links to Mystic Trilogy, your website, all of that in the description of our of this episode. And but if you like what we do here, follow us on social media. We're on Twitter at LightsWorkPod. We're on Instagram at TheLightsWork. We have a Discord server that is currently a lot of Zelda discussion. I am still fighting and playing Breath of the Wild and lost in it, so I want to finish that before I do the new game, and I'm hoping to do that soon. So the Discord server is awesome, and if you are willing and able, join our patrons, our Patreon. And as we say,
wrong. And
wrong. this is
we don't say it around here.
This is funny because, you know, I'm like, when you finish the show, there's a certain way you finish the Dusty Wheel, and there's a certain way you finish here. So I'm like, I always think my first thing is, yeah, it's like, it's, I want to say it, but I can't. Until next time, it's your turn to go out into the world and do the Light's Work.
The Light's Work is a Wheel of Time fandom podcast hosted by Anas and Grace.
The Light's Work is in no way affiliated with the Children of the Light.
Please leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice. Follow us on social media or sponsor us on Patreon.